Getting you set for today's game as part of our seven-hour pregame presented by Garage Units. Here's John Davis and former Bronco Orlando Franklin.
The Denver Broncos versus the Cleveland Browns today. To me, the Cleveland Browns have been everybody's darling on this radio station. Everybody seems to really, really be excited about them. As Orlando comes in here and sits down with me, Orlando, the Browns are 5-7-1 and fired their coach mid-season. Why is everybody acting like the Broncos are playing the 2007 New England Patriots today?
Because of what happened last week. You know, the Broncos go into San Francisco and play a team that they're supposed to beat and stink up the place and get beat out there. So I know it's a home game and the Broncos perform better at home, but you don't really know what's going to happen until all that scoreboard and that clock reads 0-0 at the end of the game. I've seen two games this year that going into the game, I thought those games were guaranteed wins for the Denver Broncos.
You're going to bring up the Jets, aren't you?
Yeah, the Jets and the San Francisco 49ers. And right now, the Cleveland Browns, throughout the whole year, has played really good defense. But their offense is clicking on all cylinders right now.
All cylinders?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Run, pass.
I just look at Baker Mayfield's stats as an individual. You know, 2,877 yards this year. Against Cincinnati this season, which was at Cincinnati, and I'm only going to look at his away record, his away touchdowns.
Because it's an away game.
Because it's an away game. He throws four touchdowns against Cincinnati. He throws two touchdowns against Pittsburgh away. He throws two touchdowns against Tampa Bay, and he throws two touchdowns against Oakland. Given the quarterback that we have here for the Denver Broncos, if Baker Mayfield goes out there and has an incredible day like he did against Cincinnati, where he throws for four touchdowns, I don't know that the Broncos win this football game.
Well, I don't know if you win any game that the other guy throws four touchdowns, but Cincinnati's...
We saw the Rams and the Chiefs do it, both quarterbacks.
Okay, so now, I don't think we should get in the habit of comparing Broncos, Browns to Chiefs, Rams.
I think that'll be comparing points.
Okay.
That's all I can compare.
So,
and if a quarterback is capable
of going
out
there
and throwing four touchdowns, when I know Case Keenum is not capable of doing that, it gets me a little bit frustrated.
So, do you think he can, who's throwing four touchdowns on the Broncos this year? I don't even think, has that even happened yet?
Yeah, it has not happened.
But Patrick Mahomes might have done
there's
it.
There's a lot of things that don't happen.
That can happen.
That can happen to this team week in, week out. I mean, we knew that the Broncos struggled against the tight end. Kittle has 210 yards last week in the first half.
Okay.
He broke a record for, and will probably have this record for the next 40 years of most yardage by a tight end
for the 49ers. Yeah, in the first half, right. He didn't get the record.
He was four short. Didn't even get the ball in the second half. But 210 yards, John?
In one half?
You think that record's being broken anytime soon?
No, it's not going to. But what about, before we go down that route, I want to loop back to this, to the Browns. So Baker Mayfield, you've seen him throw four touchdowns, regardless of who it's against. Cincinnati's defense is total garbage. But you're saying
right now our defense is struggling too.
But we're not as bad, even in this.
Yeah, we're not as bad as Cincinnati's defense, but I mean we're not that far off.
No.
When I look at it with the loss of Chris Harris Jr.
Okay.
And Shaq Barrett not being able to go.
Is he not going today? Is that do you know that? I don't think he is. He practiced, but I don't think he is.
He didn't practice all week, and then on Thursday he got in a limited practice. And
but to your point,
I don't think he's going to be able to go. He's one of the guys that is the heart and soul of this defense, man. And I hate to say it because I know he went to your school, and I don't like to talk about the Rams, but he's a guy that's been very reliable, an unsung hero for this Denver Broncos defense, has came in and has got better each and every year and has improved. But you have other playmakers. Absolutely. Absolutely. You have other playmakers. On football's the ultimate unselfish sport. It takes 11 guys out there doing their job in order to be successful, 100%. But when you have some of these key guys that are down, you know, and you have these great play callers that it's a copycat league, so you have these play callers that look to exploit other teams' weaknesses. And right now, you know, I'm looking for David Njoku, the tight end for the Cleveland Browns, to have a huge day today. Right now, I'm looking for this Chubb and Duke Johnson Jr. I'm looking for them to test this Broncos run defense today, because that's what you see week to week.
With so you're looking at it, the Broncos a week, and I mean, to your point with injuries, I think Derek Wolf is still, you know, he had a concussion. It sounds like he might go today. And so they're going, but the Browns, oh, you talk about play calling. The Cleveland Browns offensive play calling, they were able to do it. They got Freddie Kitchens is the offensive coordinator. He took over mid-year when they fired Todd Haley. These guys aren't Kyle Shanahan. Kyle Shanahan is a very special play caller.
But these guys also have their whole team there. Kyle Shanahan is a special play caller, and we saw what Kyle Shanahan could do with a makeshift roster. McKenna got hurt at the start of the season. That was their starting running back. That was their guy that they paid a ton of money to come in there to be the guy, be their bell cow. He gets hurt in preseason. Then their starting quarterback gets hurt. They're on their third quarterback. Baker Mayfield was drafted number one overall pick to be the starting quarterback. Look how many different quarterbacks got drafted this year in the draft. He was the first one taken. He was the one that they were saying, hey, you know what? This guy has the most upside. When you're the first overall pick, that's what they're thinking. This guy has the most upside. And, John, I think you're getting it twisted. You might be thinking right now that I'm saying the Broncos are going to lose this football game. I'm not saying that.
Okay.
I'm saying that the Broncos better show up and better play this football game like they played the Chargers, like they played the Steelers. Expect to win, but go out there and put a dominant product on the field and take care of business.
You're saying the Browns are a dangerous team.
If you let them hang around, this team has potential to stay in games and to pull one off at the end.
They play hard to the end.
Oh, and you don't want to go into overtime with this team. I'll tell you that.
Why?
This team has went into overtime many times this year.
They have.
Has won football games in overtime.
Dude, they win it.
When's the last time the Broncos went into overtime?
When did the Broncos go into overtime?
Not the Texans. We went in.
Did we go into overtime this year? Boy, this is, yeah, welcome to the Denver Broncos show. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So the Broncos, I don't think they did. But anyway, so the Browns, my thing is everybody's parading this around. You know, it went from Vance Joseph being coach of the year to all of us sitting around talking about, oh my God, the Browns are a more desirable team. The Browns, this, and this.
Winning,
this is a 5-7-1 football team.
Hey, it's winning. It's all about winning. You're only as good as your last team that you beat and the last team that you played against. And I saw Cleveland beat a Carolina team that's
no good.
Everybody, I picked them to lose that game. I thought Carolina was going to be able to beat them.
Carolina's on like a 5-game losing streak.
Okay, and what was the Broncos on? When the Broncos went and played against the Steelers, went again played against the Los Angeles Chargers, what was the losing streak at that point?
For the Chargers, it would have been probably like 3 because they beat the Cardinals.
Yeah, but we all picked them to lose that game, right? And they were able to go out there and rally and win a football game, right?
Right.
Winning becomes contagious. When you win football games in this league, people start changing their perception of you as a team.
Is losing contagious?
Oh, absolutely.
So it can go both ways.
Absolutely.
How hard is it? What's harder to build the habit of? To break out of losing or to keep winning going?
To keep winning going.
That's harder.
Because when you start winning football games and you stink that your stuff doesn't smell, you know what I mean? That's the easiest way to start losing and get complacent out there. You know, you got to constantly work and have that fire and have that dog in you each and every week, especially when you're winning football games. Like I tell you, man, I tell you the story all the time, man. And I know people get annoyed of hearing it. You know, when we played Super Bowl 48, we didn't think we were going to lose that game. Everybody was like, oh, we're going to beat this game. We're the highest scoring offense in NFL history. But we got complacent. And we went out there and guys had bad games, me included. I had a bad game. You know, I'm a grown man. I can look myself in the mirror and I tell myself that I had a bad game. But you got to be able to go out there week in, week out and take care of business. And when you win in this league, it's hard to do that. You become complacent. So losing, it's easier to get out of a losing streak because you're constantly fighting. You're constantly battling.
So the Broncos, I think, can snap out of the losing streak today. Last week, Orlando had a big problem with something going on in the Broncos game. He was mad during the game. How did the Broncos fix it? He tells us next.
Getting you set for today's game as part of our 7-hour pregame presented by Garage Units. Here's John Davis and former Bronco Orlando Franklin.
Orlando, last week, you had spent the previous weeks praising Bill Musgrave, saying he's dialing it up. He's dialing it up. And then last week, you were beside yourself angry. What does Bill Musgrave need to do this week to correct the sins of last week?
We need to go back to more of a three-step drop. You know, I saw last week Case Keenum sitting in the pocket and taking these deep drops, these seven-step drops. And yeah, I get it. Emmanuel Sanders is hurt, and it takes a little bit longer for these younger wide receivers to get open, but that could be changed by scheme. If you're scheming it up and you have these rub routes and these naturally pick plays, these guys are going to be able to get open. You know, and that's what Kyle Shanahan did to the Broncos defense. He schemed it up where there was these natural rub routes and these natural developing plays where these guys were running these routes to get a guy open, and it made it a clear read for Nick Mullins. So because of Case Keenum and his struggles that we've seen him have as a quarterback, as far as the ball coming out too late at times and the ball being thrown, whether it's 5 inches to the right, 5 inches to the left, not the perfect pass that we were looking for, Bill Musgrave needs to do a better job in scheming it and running these route combinations that it's either the first guy's open or it's a 1-2 read. It's not a full progression play where you read your deep route, then you got your middle to deep route, then you got your underneath route, then you got your check down. No, we don't need to do that with Case Keenum. We need to scheme this game up a little bit better with the way we call the plays, where guys are, it's a first or second read, and Case Keenum's getting the ball out of his hands right now.
So, because one of the biggest criticisms of Case Keenum is he's holding on to the ball too long. To me, it's like sometimes you see him run back. That's a product of these 5 to 7 step drops that's just making a play take forever to develop.
Yeah, and especially, I don't know why he would have these 5 to 7 step drop plays, because, you know, this offensive line as hasn't looked the best. You know, I saw it ever since the Cincinnati game where Cincinnati did a lot of movement up front with their defensive line, and this inside three has struggled because of it. So because your inside three is struggling, you got to be able to call these quicker hidden passes where now your offensive line could change up their sets and have an opportunity to cut these defensive tackles and get them on the ground where Case Keenum's going to be getting the ball out of his hands right now.
So it literally sounds like the 3-step drop is easier for absolutely everybody. From what you're saying, the quarterback, the O-line.
Oh, man, I love a 3-step drop, man.
Okay, so you're a fan of the 3-step drop.
I love a 3-step drop. Yeah, because it immediately gives you an opportunity to change it up. And
change what up?
When people talk about offensive line plays, either you're going frontwards or backwards. You're going frontwards in the run game. You're going backwards in the passing game. But when you're going backwards in the passing game, you have different options in what you're going to do. Whether you're going to, if a defensive lineman is really wide, you know, that's when you're supposed to use your vertical set because you got to get back as quick as possible. But if a defensive lineman is on your body now, you could actually set out to him and actually cover a little bit of space and close that distance now between you and him and get your hands on him right now. So with a 3-step drop, you're able to always close that distance. But not only can you close that distance, you also have the free will and have the ability now to cut block these guys, and that's showing a high hat and letting these guys think, hey, it's pass. So now the defensive lineman gets in a pass rush mode and starts taking these elongated steps to try to get back there to the quarterback. And now, right when you're getting ready to make contact, you go down on him and chop his knees out and be able to get him on the ground. It's a great change up. It frustrates the heck out of defensive linemen because it's hard for a defensive lineman to go into pass rush mode and now put their hands down to be able to protect their knees. So when you're able to call the games like that and keep, you're also able to keep these defensive linemen on their heels and not have them knowing exactly what you're doing. And if you cut one person one time in a game and you're successful in it, because these defensive linemen do not like these cut blocks, it's always going to be in the back of their mind. So they're always going to have to think about, hey, is this guy going to cut me on this play? And now when you give them the exact same look, where you give them that high hat, it immediately runs upon their mind, hey, is this a cut block? So they start, they tend to slow down, and it becomes to, it makes an offensive lineman's job easier.
So that's
with
all,
the way a play, with the way a coordinator calls a game.
So that can all be created by a three-step drop.
Absolutely.
Everything you just said can just, all they got to do is call it. And the, you know, last week's game is over. Focus on this one. But real quick, what do you think possessed Bill Musgrave to call those plays last week? It clearly sounds there was no, it sounds like there was absolutely no reason to do it.
I think he was trying to do a little bit too much with the injury to Emmanuel Sanders and also to the lack of production out of Phillip Lindsay early in the game. So I think he was trying to call these plays where, hey, maybe we could take a shot down the field, but our quarterback is a quarterback that doesn't want to take these shots down the field.
So it was
so you called these longer dropbacks in order to go get a bigger chunk down the field, these 40-yard plays, these 35-yard plays.
They panicked when Phillip Lindsay wasn't off to the races, so
this offense has been ran by, through Phillip Lindsay the last couple of weeks. Absolutely, they panicked. When Phillip Lindsay, a guy that was averaging well over 5 yards a carry, I think it was 6.2 yards a carry on the season going into last week's game, when now he comes into the game and you're trying to run these exact same runs that you have ran in the past with them, but they're not going nowhere and they're a 1 yard gain or they're a 2 yard loss. Yeah, any team is going to panic, but I think he more panicked with the loss of Emmanuel Sanders now and created these longer routes saying that, hey, if the offensive line is able to hold up, at some point, these wide receivers, these younger guys are going to get open. Like you can, it's hard for a DB to cover a guy for 3-4 seconds. So I think he called these longer plays thinking that at some point these guys were going to get open, but the offensive line wasn't able to hold up. So we saw plays where there was a lot of guys and a lot of traffic in Case Keenum's face, but we also saw Case Keenum continue to drift back. And when you're a quarterback, man, unless you're Patrick Mahomes, that you could drift back 10 yards and throw it off your back leg and throw the ball 50 yards down the field as a dart, Case Keenum can't do that. Your average quarterback in the league can't do that. So you can't rely on them to do that.
So Bill Musgrave today, is it more about just say, hey, this is our game plan, let's stick to it and not...
Yeah, he needs to go out there and not let...
just stick to it.
Yeah, he needs to go out there and not let the Cleveland Browns defense dictate his game plan.
And that's what happened last week.
Know your identity as an offense. Run your plays that you have been successful at. Run your plays that your quarterback is comfortable at running, and run your plays that have been your bread and butter all year. You know, that's what's the difference between this Denver Broncos team and when you saw Peyton Manning was here, when you saw back in the day with John Elway, you had your bread and butter. When it was 3rd and 5, it didn't matter if 75,000 people in the stadium knew that you were running this play. It was up to the defense to try to stop it because you ran it so good. And you were so efficient at running it, and the percentages of you completing it and being able to move the chains, it's so high that you don't care that they know the play. You're going to run it regardless. And that's the mentality that Bill Musgrave needs to have.
Bill Musgrave, 3-step drops. Run the plays you want to run. Trust yourself. That's what Big O says. Baker Mayfield's the toast of the town, but he can be stopped. O's got a way to do it. He tells us next.
Getting you set for today's game as part of our 7-hour pregame presented by Garage Units. Here's John Davis and former Bronco Orlando Franklin.
Baker Mayfield, number one overall pick in this last year's draft. 19 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. Orlando, a lot of hype on this guy. What is the one thing the Denver Broncos have to do today to slow down the number one overall pick, Baker Mayfield?
They need to attack their left tackle.
The left tackle of the Browns.
The left tackle. D. Harrison. He has 8 penalties on the season. Eight holding calls this year.
Eight holding calls.
On the season. Their left tackle for the Cleveland Browns.
Not quite Joe Thomas, huh?
Yeah. You need to attack this guy. You need to expose him. You got Bradley Chubb and Von Miller. You're coming into their neighborhood, their neck of the woods. You got to play on the road. You got that mile-high noise, that magic that's going to be happening in that stadium tonight. It's a night game.
National TV.
The only game in the country.
What's that like?
Oh, man, it's awesome. But they got to attack him.
They got to attack him.
Yeah, and those night games, I mean, it's bittersweet. And the way I say it is, you're so used to when you get in the season, you get so used to, you know, getting into this ritual and this routine. You wake up, and for me, I would get up, I would eat breakfast, and then if I was playing here, I'd actually go to this, I'd go get stretched out right by the stadium. There was this mm-hmm. little facility right by the stadium, but I would go home first. So right after I ate breakfast, I would go home, I would hang out at home for a little bit, I would change, and then I'd get in the car, and then my drive up, I'd go get stretched out. And then literally after I got stretched out, it was like 2 miles away from this facility. So then I would just drive into the facility. I'd like to get there 3 hours before. And immediately when I got to the facility each and every week, I would strip down and change my clothes. I'd put on shorts and I'd get a long sleeve team issued shirt. And it didn't matter how cold it was or what the weather was outside. I'd be in shorts and a long sleeve dry fit shirt and I'd put on flip flops. And I'd go out to the stadium now, and I'd walk around the stadium. I'd like to take my lap. I'd start at the end zone. I'd walk the end zone, and I'd walk the other team's sideline. I'd walk the back end zone.
Wow.
Then start walking our sideline, and then I'd go on the bench, and I would sit in my position on the bench where we would come and make corrections. So I'd sit on the bench, and I'd sit there for about 10 minutes. I'd FaceTime my wife every time, and I'd sit there and – and it just after I FaceTime, it was a 2-minute FaceTime call with my wife, but then I'd sit there for another 8 minutes and I would just start going through, you know, when I was playing with Peyton, and I'd go through the different plays that we changed up that week and the play calling and the names of it, you know, because he was very big on watching the TV copy. And if he felt that he said a word a little bit too much that week, we would change that word throughout the week. So I would just continue to go through it in my head, go over it. Hey, this word that meant this last week is now this, and just continue to drill it in my head and just sit there. And then I would sit there for another couple minutes and by myself after that, and I would just have my head down and just try to start getting into the game and visualizing what I'm trying to do, you know, and constantly tell myself, you know, no mistakes, you know, if it's 3rd and 2, what are we checking to? And just going over just little plays, little details, you know, constantly going over just the little details each and every time. And then I would get up and I'd walk in to the train. I'd get up and I'd start walking into the stadium and I'd go in the locker room. I'd jump in the shower. And after I got in the shower, I'd get in the hot tub and then I'd start getting ready. I got ready. It took me like 2 hours. On game day to get ready, like between tape in my hands, but it was just very slow. It wasn't like you were getting ready like you had a run out of the door in the morning because right. You were late for the school bus. No, it was very nonchalant getting ready, tape my fingers while I'm in the hot tub.
No rush.
Like, there was no rush. But when you play in a night game now, it becomes completely different.
Really?
You know, your routine, it's different because everything's like later now. So now you're used to showering in the morning. On game days, when I played at nighttime, I shower 3 times now, all of a sudden, because I'd wake up in the morning and shower. And then when I got to the stadium and the facility after my walk, I'd jump in the shower. And then after the game, you got to jump in the shower. So it just starts changing up a little bit, but you just have longer to sit there and go through things in your head. So it's a completely different routine, but I kept it the same once I got to the stadium. But you just got so much more leisure time, especially on a day like today, when, you know, typically when you're playing on a Sunday night, you at least could watch the morning game. You know, today the Broncos are going to be getting to the stadium while that second game is starting. You know, you're traveling while that second game is starting. So it's a completely different routine, but Sorry to get off topic.
No, it's a great story. Is the left tackle, what is his name for the Browns? I know it and it's slipping
Harrison.
Harrison. National TV, this guy is already prone to mistakes. You say this is a guy they got to attack. What would it feel like? What do you think is going through this guy's head as he's got to be on national TV? His team's got a lot of hype behind him right now, and he's got to go against not one, but two of the top 10 pass rushers in the NFL. Because he's going to see them both tonight.
Yeah, no. He's definitely going to see them both. I can tell you this. I know the Cleveland Browns got to meet Kobe Bryant last night.
And, man, Kobe.
You know, people would probably think, you know, you get to meet a guy that's so iconic that, you could basically have a great night worth of sleep. But I guarantee he didn't sleep a full 8 hours last night. Going into this game knowing that you got to play not one, but you got to play two of the best pass rushers in this league. And you got to put, if you're not seeing one of them, you're going to see the opposite one. And now you got to play them for about 70 plays, but you're not playing them at home now. You're playing them on the road in a stadium that is loud as heck. But not only that, these players, man, they're the best in the world. And you got to do that, and the whole world is watching. I know he's stressing. And the Broncos need to take advantage of that.
How do they do that?
If you want to slow down Baker Mayfield, just do what you continue to do. Bradley Chubb needs to be effective in the pass game. Von Miller needs to be effective in the pass game. You don't need to go out there and change anything.
But last week they had Bradley Chubb continually dropping into coverage. So eliminate that hole.
And that's a Joe Woods thing and a Vance Joseph thing. I mean, for the life of me, I don't really understand how you'll drop a guy that's in the top 10 in sacks in pass coverage that doesn't do that very well. I mean, and no knock on Bradley Chubb, because I feel like he's definitely going to get better. And as his career progresses, you know, he's going to be a great person that you could drop and very reliable person that you could drop on crucial situations. But I'd much rather have a Bradley Chubb rushing the passer than dropping him back. But in order for the Broncos to not drop Bradley Chubb in those, you got to bring these man-to-man pressures. You got to play man-to-man defense, because there's two type of pressures in this league. There's man-to-man pressures where now everybody basically is assigned to a gap and you're not dropping anybody from the defensive line. And then you have these zone pressures, which are you're bringing one more than the offense can block, and you're overload pressure to one side. So when that happens, typically what we see is they'll move Von Miller to the right side where Bradley Chubb plays, and then Bradley Chubb will go to the left side where Von Miller plays, and then they will rotate the defense and drop Bradley Chubb and let Von Miller rush the quarterback, which, I mean, I get why they're doing it. Von's more elusive than Bradley Chubb, so you want him to be involved in the blitz, especially when he's crashing down and he's able to pick a gap and pick and choose where he's trying to rush. But Bradley Chubb is just not that premier cover guy. He's a premier pass rusher, so you got to get him to get after the quarterback. But
to where he has to worry about nothing else besides it's just the QB this play. Baker Mayfield's very good off schedule. When the play kind of breaks down, he's willing to kind of draw it up in the sand, as they say. The old Brett Favre, he loves to play. I hate that narrative. But anyway, so with Baker Mayfield, how do they contain him and not allow him to get out there and kind of, you just got to get your hands on him immediately?
He's not like a Cam Newton. He's not like a
no,
Big
he's not
Ben,
like
you
that.
Know what I mean? He will go down. So you got to contain him in the pocket, and you got to have a tremendous effort from your defensive tackles. You know, I want to see Shelby Harris cut it loose and get after the quarterback. He kind of disappeared last week, but, you know, he had two great games the week before. So I want to see Shelby Harris come back onto the scene and be disruptive in the passing game, especially from that D-tackle position, because it's going to take a combined effort. You know, this whole front four is going to have to be productive today in order to have an opportunity to win this game, but have to and create quarterback hits and knockdowns on Baker Mayfield. But you got to have some great linebackers as well. When they blitz, you got to be able to bring them down.
I like that, because the Broncos' key to stopping Baker Mayfield involves us using two of our five best players. So I think that's a pretty good game plan to rely on those. It's Orlando Franklin and John Davis brought to you by Garage Units. Need a space for your classic car, boat, or RV? Go to garageunits.com. That's Garage Units with a Z. There is a battle going on tonight between two first-round picks, and it's got me scared. What is that? And do the Broncos even stand a chance? We get to that next.
Getting you set for today's game as part of our seven-hour pregame presented by Garage Units. Here's John Davis and former Bronco Orlando Franklin.
Denver Broncos, Cleveland Browns play tonight. I almost said tomorrow night. Tonight, the rare Saturday game. Oh, real quick, do you ever play in a Saturday game? No, you didn't. Anyway, so the Broncos, I need to tell them these things.
You'd be able to tell them better than I would remember that, yeah.
A couple years ago, Myles Garrett, first overall draft pick in the entire NFL draft, kind of how the Broncos did with Von Miller, get that cornerstone pass rush early on. The Broncos took a guy named Garrett Bowles that year. Tonight, Bowles and Myles Garrett v. Garrett, is going to be going on. I think I know the answer to this question, but who's got the advantage?
Garrett Bowles has the advantage.
Garrett Bowles over Myles Garrett. You're crazy.
Yeah,
what are you talking about? No, he doesn't.
I honestly got to go. Myles Garrett has crazy numbers.
He's
crazy numbers, crazy good. But when I look at it and the way Garrett Bowles has been playing, yeah, saw the penalty last week. Not his fault.
It wasn't his fault.
You know, that's on the inability for Elijah Wilkinson to get his job done and Case Keenum not having nowhere to step up. You know, that penalty came at 10 yards in the backfield where Case Keenum had no business being on that play. But I say Garrett Bowles has the advantage because he's the home team. You know, not only are you playing at home, so you're going to be able to hear all the audibles, all the checks of Case Keenum, but now we're going to be able to do some things with our tight ends and our running backs as far as chipping on their way out when they're free releasing and getting out into these routes. So I think they're going to not leave Garrett Bowles on the island. He is not that superstar stud, that Ryan Clady back in the day where you just put him out there and not have to worry about him type of guy.
Have a good game. We'll talk to you later.
Yeah, we'll see you at the end of the game. He's not that type of player. And Bill Musgrave knows that, and they have done some good things in the past to help Garrett Bowles. And let's be honest, I mean, he's playing night and day compared to what he was playing like last year and compared to what we saw the first couple games of the season. So
really
he's
just
playing
the first
better.
18 games,
but
yeah.
I am scared, you know. I'm sure that when they came in on Wednesday this week or Tuesday because it speeded up this week, I'm sure they highlighted Myles Garrett, and they said, hey, this guy's a playmaker. This guy's a game wrecker. You know, each and every week in the NFL, we would highlight, we would come in, and they would put guys up when you went through the personnel meetings and of guys that are game wreckers, and you got to make sure you know where they are at all times. And he's a leader of that defense, man. This year alone, Myles Garrett, 12 and a half sacks.
He's at 12 and a half sacks.
25 quarterback hits. 11 tackle for losses.
And Garrett Bowles has the advantage, according to you.
He has the advantage because he's home, and we know what we have in Garrett Bowles. We're not going to put him on an island. We are going to do things, whether Case loves to roll out right and throw the ball. Myles Garrett will be on the left. Look for Case to do that at least 4 to 5 times.
So just get away from him.
Get him away from him. Look for Philip Lindsay to chip on his way out. Look for a Matt Lacoste, a Brian Parker to line up right beside Garrett Bowles and chip. Teams do it to Von Miller week in, week out. So you got to be smart when you're playing against a guy that has the potential to take over a game, and you got to find a way to eliminate him. Because if you let that guy be productive today and you don't worry about him and you say, hey, Garrett Bowles, good luck, he will wreck this game. So I think he has the advantage because we have a play caller in Bill Musgrave that has called plays and has dialed it up where he's been able to eliminate these pass rushers. We saw it in
Chargers,
the Chargers game. Joey Bosa, yeah, he's coming off the injury, but Melvin Ingram. We saw the way Bill Musgrave called the plays was able to eliminate those guys.
Same with the Pittsburgh game.
The Denver Broncos had a makeshift offensive line that game that got solidified on Friday after Max Garcia goes down, and they go in that game, they don't give up a sack. So don't tell me that he can't have an advantage. That's a way. with crowd noise where you got to look inside for a head bob. Now you could literally look at Myles Garrett every play, know where he's at, know his alignment, know the set that you need to take, but also hear Case Keenum and hear his checks, but also have the ability to have tight ends chipping him and running backs chipping him on their way out. Garrett Bowles, if Garrett Bowles has a bad game today, and it'll be because Bill Musgrave decided to leave him on an island and said, that's not the matchup that we're worried about.
Is that kind of what we saw earlier this year, like with Terrell Suggs?
Yeah.
And things like that, where they were just really kind of putting too much. So you're saying is Garrett Bowles.
But they're at full strength now. You have
who?
You
who's have, at full strength? The Broncos?
The Broncos. You have Jared Valdir, who is, he's your best player on that offensive line. Jared Valdir is your best player on
as is right now.
He's your best player on that offensive line. He's your guy that you don't need to have a running back come and chip.
Really?
No, I see it week in, week out. The help goes to Garrett Bowles. It doesn't go to Jared Valdir.
He's going against Jamie Collins today.
Okay.
You're not worried about Jamie Collins?
Jared Valdir is gonna win that matchup.
Okay, that's
he's fair. Gonna take care of that matchup.
He matches up well.
They match up really well.
Okay, so back to Garrett
Bowles. So you got to send the help to Garrett Bowles' side.
Okay, slide the protection.
It's either you're sliding the protection or you're having a back or a tight end chip. So whatever way you're sliding the protection, if Valdir is getting some slide pro to his way. Now you have Philip Lindsay helping Garrett Bowles with a late chip on his way out. Now you have a Matt Lacoste on the backside that's lining up right beside Garrett Bowles and running through a Myles Garrett on his way out in his route.
Is this you've laid out a really good plan for the Broncos.
I should be offensive coordinator.
You should be an offensive coordinator.
I can't work the hours though.
You can't work the you can't
way
be.
Too much hours.
Is what you're saying? Look, I watched.
Oh no, trust me.
Easier said than done.
You gotta go out there and execute.
Yeah,
you 100% gotta go out there and execute because every play's a home run when you're sitting in. I mean, what are we at? 70 degrees right now in studio. I could draw up a million plays on this board right now, and they're all gonna be home runs.
They're all touchdowns.
Yeah, but you gotta go out there and execute. You gotta go out there and Garrett Bowles will have times in this game where he has to win his one-on-one battle. 100%. But you're just not going to leave him 100% of the time and say, hey, you got to go block this guy. Because guess what? I've been a part of teams that we did that. When Ryan Clady was in, slide protection. No, Clady, we're not sliding to you. We're sliding to O. We're sliding to the other way. So, I mean, when you have your premier guy, that's your ability that you're able to do. And unfortunately, the Broncos don't have their premier guy at their left tackle, but they have a guy that has been playing a lot better and looks night and day compared to from his freshman campaign to his sophomore campaign this year.
Well, we haven't seen a holding call from him in quite a while.
I mean, he gets it last week, but I mean, it's not on him.
That was going to be my next question. Yeah. Is they could execute all of that great to Garrett, because I don't know if anybody watched any highlights or anything of that Panthers game last year. Myles Garrett was doing things that are going to ruin that poor tackle's life. I mean, that was...
It's going to be nightmares about it 20 years from now.
Yeah, Myles Garrett was coming through. But could Garrett Bowles maybe today catch the scorn of fans? Because when it's not really his fault, like we saw last week, because the interior line still has to hold up their end of that.
That's why you play offensive line, you know? 5 = 1, dude.
There it is. It doesn't matter. Segment 3, but there it is.
No. I mean, those guys got to go out there and they got to take care of business. You know what I mean? In order to be successful, you know, everybody has to be on the same page. So if those guys, if Elijah Wilkins, if Connor McGovern, if Billy Turner are taking care of business in the middle and keeping that pocket flat, where Case Keenum now has a place to step up, it now takes a defensive end that's a prolific pass rusher and makes him one-dimensional, because now an offensive tackle is able to guide him where you want him to go. You want him to have to run that hump and run around you. You don't want him to come inside and be able to give you an inside move. When you know that your guys are on the inside, your inside three, those guards and center are stout inside, you're able to take away a lot of those different pass rush moves from defensive end. So all five of these guys need to go out and have a day for this offensive line, because if they don't, like you said, you're going to see where, I guarantee it, last week when Garrett Bowles gives up the sack last week and gets the holding call, everybody's like,
"We saw
Garrett Bowles again. What the heck's going on? This, this, and that." You see it. But that when you take a look at that play, I mean, Case Keenum has absolutely nowhere to step up in the pocket. And the reason why he doesn't is because Elijah Wilkins completely whiffs on his block.
Right. So real quick, just give me a number. Myles Garrett sacks tonight. How many?
I mean, I'm not going to say zero because, you know, the kid already has 12 and a half yeah. for the year. But I'll say a half a sack.
A half a sack for Myles Garrett. I think he gets 1.5 sacks. We're going to come back to Myles Garrett in this show, probably in the third hour, because he's outstanding. The Broncos, for consecutive seasons now, have been bad at something. Last week, they were historically bad. Can they get it corrected? We talk about that next.